You're listening to the Build Assets Online Podcast. Learn how you can build a diverse and sustainable income online from two brothers who actually do it. Now, here are your hosts, Mike and Joe.
Joe and Mike back again, buildassetsonline.com. Hope you guys enjoyed the new loading screen. I thought it was a bit more professional than last time. Me and Mike, we're really polishing some things up around here, hopefully. It's going to be slow, arduous, but we're polishing things up. And I think that has a lot to do with today's episode because we're talking about having five high-ticket dropshipping stores versus one high-ticket dropshipping store. And in essence, what we've done over since 2015, 2016, whenever we started, we basically, our approach to everything was throw as much stuff at the wall. Let's see what's working. We'll pick up the pieces later. Let's just go at it and see what happens. That's been our approach. And to be honest with you, that's got us a long way. There's no denying that. You learn a lot doing that. But what happens is, and I guess, you know, for our students, for people who want to become our students, the same is true with Build Assets Online. Changed our packages 10 times, you know, used 10 different platforms. You know, it's just all disorganized. It's all crazy, but that's just how we rolled up until recently, where because we've done this, we've gotten to a point where we can take a step back, take a breath, and see what we want to do, see what we don't want to do, and organize. So in this episode, when we're comparing five high-ticket dropshipping stores versus one, keep all of this in mind, what I just said. This is our history. This is how we've got here. And this is why we want to talk about it, because it's important. And actually, students often ask us what the better option is. So that was a quite a long diatribe, Mike, but I don't know. It just happened. It just came out of my mouth.
Sounded like a monotribe to me.
Diatribe. Is that different?
I don't even know. No. Yeah, I think this question or this scenario gets really to the core of our journey, our evolution in mindset, our evolution in skill set. And it's, again, if you're going to do drop shipping, I think the way that we present things is like, yeah, you know, it's really easy to pivot. It's really easy to do things in a way where you can basically, I don't want to say ensure success because results are not guaranteed. You know, that whole disclaimer, but really the more things you throw at the wall, the easier it is to have something stick and then you can build off of that one thing. And that's really how we've gone about it. I think we've had some conflicting advice along the way for people to tell us not to do that, but you know,
have we had conflicting advice?
Yeah, we can get to it in a second.
Okay.
Maybe not directly to us. Maybe directly to us. But we'll talk about it. So why don't we, I guess, do the pros and cons.
So, okay, let's start with the five high-ticket dropshipping store scenario, and we'll talk about the pros of it. So the pros, I've already stated, is that you get to try a bunch of things. You get to see how doing the same thing across different scenarios can produce widely different results. So for example, you execute on the ad strategy we teach across five different stores. The truth is you're going to have different results for every store. You're going to have different results for every supplier, and doing it across so many websites shows you that. And that's very important to understand. So those are really the two pros. The other pro, I guess, is that you can, once you do it once, once you do the initial setup once, you can do the rest rather quickly. You know, you've already set up a store, you just duplicate the theme or whatever, and then you're pretty much good to go. Are there any other pros you can think of?
For the five stores? Well, I guess the question comes into play, right? Because you have to start with one store. You can't just make five stores at once.
Yeah.
So you make the first store, it's smaller. Maybe you have, you know, a handful of suppliers. And then the question becomes, do I get more suppliers for this store or do I just make another store?
Yeah.
So the pros of going ahead and making another store is, like you said, it gives you some sort of diversity inside of your ads account, as well as just being able to see what is something that you're screwing up, or maybe something that is happening to you that is industry specific. And this was something that we struggled with mightily when we made our first store, because in the first year of dropshipping, we had made 4 stores, but we had the first store for about, we made it in March, and then it wasn't until August. So it was 5 months that we just had one store.
And Mike, when we decided to do this, I remember actually we were sitting at our parents' dining room table, and I remember the conversation that we had, because we had success with this one store. You know, it was a little bit successful, and we were trying to figure out what to do. And I remember I said to you, because I was comparing it to the only other thing we knew at the time, or the thing we knew at the time the most, was Kindle. I was like, if this was Kindle, we would just put out 100 books and then we'd be good to go. And so that was the mind state going into this. When in reality, dropshipping is a whole different animal. It's more to set up.
But I think it was a helpful mind state, because I think it was something, the 5-store concept, when you're a newbie, I think it's easier to wrap your head around, because it gives you more rolls of the dice. If you're my problem with like ClickFunnels and, you know, that type of business model is that they're like, yeah, you know, you just make a funnel and then it just works. And then, you know, you're made $1 million, where yes, you can make $1 million off of a funnel, but to expect to be able to just make one funnel and have that happen, I think is unrealistic. And we had, I think run into issues where we would try and do something as a one-off and it would not pan out. So any strategy that allowed us to do the same thing over and over, whether it was make a Kindle book, okay, now make another Kindle book, make another Kindle book. It allowed us to refine our strategies and refine our execution to where we were actually able to see improvement. And we were able to see, okay, like there are times where you just do something and you just hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
And it produces a good result.
And sometimes you can have something work on one store and then you can notice, oh, wow, that worked. And then figure out how to apply it to another store. So that's another interesting thing that happens when you have 5 stores.
Yeah. No, and that's really what happened to us. I mean, the first store we made, we did not have a lot of success with it. I think before we made the second store, our highest revenue month might have been like, you know, 10,000, maybe less than 20,000. And that's after like 5 months of really working at it. So we made a new store because we didn't really know what else to do.
Yeah.
The idea of expanding that one store and making it bigger didn't make sense, because we didn't really know how to do it. We didn't know what path to go down. So it's kind of it's kind of like, you know, if you're a musician, you gotta drop the second album.
Mike, I remember something interesting that happened. This was not actually with us, but with our friend Raz. I don't know how many stores he has at this point. I know he has a couple, but I remember when he started one of his stores and he uploaded some of the supply, like one of the suppliers. He just got a sale like organically before even starting his ads. And that just goes to show like how different things could be, because that would have never happened with our first store. And it's not even that he did anything like different than we did with our first store per se. It was just purely right place, right time, right supplier. And so that's so many different things can happen when you make new websites. It applies. And really, that's the beauty of an internet business, is that you can just pivot on a dime much easier than you can with a brick and mortar. You know, imagine you have a restaurant and you're like, all right,
I'm gonna open up a Chinese place, I'm gonna open up a Mexican place, I'm gonna open up an Italian place, and I'm gonna see which one works.
Yeah, exactly. It wouldn't be possible, but luckily, in the digital age, We could do it.
Yeah, I feel like we had to really we had to utilize the flexibility that the internet offered us. And so that's what we did. And when we made that second store, I think the first month we did like 30,000 in sales or something. Yeah, 20 or 30,000 for us was a lot. I remember, you know, I remember getting a call that first month, and we did like a bulk sale where we sold like 8 or like 5 of some unit, and we made, I think, like over $1,000. And that was the first time we ever did that. And this was all, you know, we had not done anything different. We did not learn anything different from the month before we made the new store to the month where we made the new store.
Yeah, I remember exactly. I remember exactly when that happened. I remember actually where I was. Yeah, I remember where I was sitting when we sold. Could we say what it is? What we sold 8 of, or no?
I don't care.
Yeah, it was like 8 vanities, right?
Yeah.
And I remember sitting. It was like in my old house at the dining room table or whatever. And you're like, "Did you see that?" And I said, "No, what?" And you said, "Then you're blind to the truth."
Yeah, I remember where I was when I took that sale. I was like sitting on my bed.
Yeah.
It was... And some guy just called and he's like, "Yeah, I want 8 of these." I was like, "Okay, shit." It wasn't a back order or anything. Like, it would just went out immediately and it was done. And that's, again, the same exact skills just applied in a different context, a slightly different context. All of a sudden turned into success.
Yeah. I mean, back to the restaurant example, it's like if you open up a Mexican restaurant in one location versus a different location, like it's, you can have vastly different results for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Or even even an Italian restaurant and a Mexican restaurant in the same location.
Yeah.
Side by side.
They can have vastly different results. I mean, here where we live, there's like an Italian restaurant every like mile, I feel like, or like a pizzeria, like every,
yeah,
I don't know how it works, honestly, but
that'd be a more saturated niche.
Yeah,
I would say.
But it's interesting because when I've traveled to the Midwest, very few independent pizzerias, more Pizza Hut. So I feel
like because there's a high Italian population here.
Yeah. So, I mean, whatever, goes to show you that you open a Pizza Hut with a high Italian American population, it's not going to do so well.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? You know, I know in San Diego, anytime I was there, you have a lot of, Mexican restaurants and stuff like that. So it's kind of the same type deal. Like, you don't really see as many Italian restaurants. But yeah, in any event, so then we made the second store. And then pretty quickly thereafter, we made like 2 more stores.
Yeah.
And so I think, since we had that success of, you know, doing a different niche and then it having results, we were like, okay, this is what we have to do. And we're like, why don't we always have 20 stores?
Yeah.
And ask us that question.
Well, that quickly became, once we had 4 or 5 or whatever, it became clear that 20 wasn't an option. Because would just be, I mean, I guess it is an option, but what it would take to do that would be way too much to execute that. Like, there's no way. Yeah.
I don't think the technology is there yet for doing that, because the issue you run into when you have too many stores is there's too many like separate pieces. Like, now you need 20 email logins.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I guess technically you could do it with like one Outlook account or something, but at the same time, it's just too much. Like, it's not like Outlook. I don't, you're like what you said, I don't think it's there yet to do it in a streamlined way.
And we were using Outlook for our 4 or 5 stores, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
We had it all on Outlook. I mean, I was even one point doing it myself, and it's just crazy. Like, you're just getting in all these emails from all these stores. Yeah. And then you try and put an employee on it. They start emailing, you know, one store from another store.
Yeah.
It's hard to integrate. But so, I mean, I think that was, but that getting to that point helped us have enough like total revenue to where we felt comfortable to outsource. But yeah, I would say at the same time, it actually made hiring and outsourcing harder.
100%. Made it very difficult. Like you said, when you have a system like that, you have 10 different email addresses and 10 different things that need to be tended to. It's not very human friendly.
No, it's definitely not. And four or five grasshoppers, you're getting a call from one store and then another store. It's like you're wearing, a bunch of different hats.
Yeah.
Take off one hat, put on a different hat, and imagine again, you have the Italian restaurant, you have the Mexican restaurant, you have the Chinese restaurant. They're all coming to your phone.
Yeah.
Different menus to memorize and stuff like that. But Joe, our chats are looking despicable. We only have Dan Z in here, and he said it's gonna be a spicy one. So if you're here, give us a chat. We'd like to see the chats, or else we get discouraged. Our egos get a bit deflated.
I can't hear you.
I hate those things. I went to the Islander game recently.
Yeah.
And it's like the scoreboard where they try and like hype people up to like yell and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what I feel like I'm doing here. But
they said I can't hear you.
Or like, yeah, like louder. That type of thing. Like trying to like rile everyone up to start
I'm thinking like a DJ. Okay. Like a DJ.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
that too. Yeah, I'm always worried about saying that, and then like no one says anything, and then you look like a bigger D-bag. But anyway, back to what we were talking about. So, yeah, we had four stores, and then really, I think the best part of what happened with that was, like I said, we were able to see things from a different context for each individual store and say, okay, this site. Well, the industry, the clicks are just super high. That's the problem. Because I know in this store, we're getting 30-cent clicks. Our sales are coming in way cheaper. And then maybe, but on that store, the margins aren't as good.
Yeah.
They say, okay, maybe this other store, I got to do more sales work.
Yeah.
But really, I think that led us to seeing how important it is to have a diversified set of suppliers as well. Because I think in any industry you're in, there's, you could say, okay, this industry has high cost per click, but really that's not always the case, because there's a way you can expand within that that vertical to capitalize on something, whether it's B2B, maybe a more niche, obscure type product. There's always ways to capture different parts of the market within a particular vertical and integrate them into, one store.
I don't know where you're going with that. Are you talking about merging stores?
I'm saying we were able to take look at each individual store and say, okay, this store might require more sales work because of this, or this store has more B2B stuff. And we're able to see, like, okay, we're selling B2B. We're getting all these schools contacting us. We're getting these huge orders.
Yeah.
We can go and we can say, okay, how can we get these types of orders on this other store?
Right.
Okay, how can we sell a type of product within this store's vertical that would allow us to capture that type of demographic?
Yeah, so you're saying, yeah, it opens up your mind to new product ideas.
Yeah, new ideas. Because I think also a problem our students have is they get kind of pigeonholed with like the types of products they believe exist or the type of suppliers. Like a lot of people just wind up going for the same things. When in reality, there's so many different products out there that you can go after. And I mean, take that one example, like the vanities. Like someone called and they gave us a bulk order, like a design company gave us like a bulk order. If we didn't have that happen, that wouldn't have opened our minds to be like, okay, we could actually sell bulk B2B stuff to people.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
And absolutely. Now you can go and bring someone in the other stores. Like, okay, where could that possibly happen? And then you can go after those things specifically.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think what we've come to in all this discussion is that having one or two stores that you're growing for the long term is the ideal end game. Now, we'll circle back to that in a second. But luckily to date, what's happened is that we've had these stores and one day we say, I don't really want these anymore. They're too much of a burden. It's like you know, it's like being, even if you don't look at it that much or you don't work on it that much or it's outsourced, it still is being pulled in a lot of different directions. And if you want to truly streamline things, you have to get rid of them. So we've ended up saying on multiple different occasions, okay, we don't want this store anymore. And then to date, we've been able to sell all the ones that we didn't want. Mm-hmm. So that's been a good thing. Hopefully that trend continues.
I think that's actually one of the best things about the 5-store strategy is that if you're making $20,000 from one store or making $20,000 spread across 5 stores, you know, $4,000 a month per store, whatever, it's easier to siphon off some equity when you want it.
Yeah.
Because if you have one store, you know, maybe you could sell that store for $600,000, $800,000, whatever, but you have to get rid of the whole store.
Yeah. And one of the things that we're learning, maybe we'll talk about this on a future episode, is that when you go to sell a store that's a very, very high value, it needs to be as organized as possible. And the only way to organize it is, you know, you can't have, like you said, an Outlook. Your system is an Outlook inbox with 10 different stores and one employee sending emails from the different thing. You can't have that when you're like, among other things that high ticket buyers won't like, or like, sorry, high budget buyers won't like, is you know, you can't have that sort of thing. Like, everything needs to be as organized as possible, as if you were selling like an actual business of some kind. Like, I mean, it is a business, but you get what I'm saying. It's more of an official business deal, I guess, than they're just buying this website off of you.
Yeah, and I heard Ace Chapman talk about this maybe a year or so ago. He said when you try and sell a business that's over 500,000, it becomes a lot more formal. People want to see books. They want to see tax returns. They want to see really all these sort of internals that you would never deal with like a $100,000 or $200,000 store sale.
Yeah.
In that price range, someone will just buy it.
I wonder if that's the same for content sites as well, since there's such fewer transactions. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's an interesting discussion that we should have, but something to think about.
Yeah, that would be a good question, because while a content site, I think the it's a lot easier to verify earnings and stuff like that. Again, when you're in that price range, you know, the money starts to get more institutional.
Yeah.
And people want to see, they want to see clean books. They want to be like, okay, you know, you have this one bank account for the entire store. What's going in it? What's coming out?
Yeah, this is going to be a discussion. I mean, I think, not to get too off topic here, but I guess people like to know what's going on with us, is this year, I think we've dedicated ourselves to, you know, meeting with our, I think we need to definitely be doing that, especially on the sites that I feel like the strategy that you should have for this is, like you said, is if you have a site that you're looking to sell for over 500,000, have a strategy of getting it in its own, with its own books and its own LLC, or then you can have one business like with seed sites, you know what I'm saying? And then once you decide, hey, these are at a certain point, maybe move them over. That could be a good strategy for a drop shipping store as well, because it becomes quite cumbersome on the business entity side. Obviously this is not tax or advice or anything like that, or legal advice, but it becomes quite cumbersome to make a million different new business entities every time you want to start a new website. So that's something to think about. One of the downsides of having a lot of stores, and once you're something important to consider once you get to this $500,000 mark.
Yeah. And that's really like back in the day, I wouldn't have wanted to hear from someone, oh, you know, every time you make a new store, you got to start a new LLC, you got to start a new bank account. Cause that would have added so much friction to the process.
We wouldn't have been able to do what we
exactly.
We wouldn't have been able to do what we did. There'd just be no way.
Exactly. So, and maybe it's just us. I don't know, but I think for us, in order to capitalize on the flexibility and the speed that an online business offers, you have to be throwing stuff at the wall and seeing if it sticks. And that was always our philosophy, was like, let's just do that. And then we'll worry about what sticks and what to do with it when that happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Mike, don't hate. I got to take a piss because we've been on for a while before the stream started. So it's not like I was unprepared for the stream. Maybe you can get to some of the chats.
Maybe I will.
All right, BRB.
All right, get out of here. All right, what's up, guys? We got Hendrick DeWitt. He's here. He waves. AJ says, sup. Doug's here. Alki Lawyers says, came for the knowledge, stayed for the jokes. Yeah, I think we got some good jokes here. I think we give a nice combo of info and, you know, cheeky banter. But AJ says, like Joe, I saw Joe walk off the screen in his short shorts there. Bow Bros, when to look at a second store? Only when your first is scaled up a bit? Or for example, if you have a store, you have good SIS, I don't know what that is. Sales are profitable but infrequent. Is that a good time not to try a second industry? So, yeah, I mean, AJ's question is basically, when do you start a second store? Do you do it when you're getting some sales, you're profitable, but the sales aren't frequent enough? Like, what's like the guiding point? So for us back in the day, that was kind of what we did. We didn't really know how to scale things. And I think we take a bit of a different approach now with our students, because we can actually like guide them towards what's going on. Because when we had our first store, you know, our second store, whatever, it took us quite a while of running a bunch of stores to see where the rooms for improvement were in each individual store and then learn how to actually execute that. So in my opinion, the question of when to start a second store would first come down to taking a look at your ads account. So there could be some obvious places for improvement in terms of optimizing your ads, increasing spend, or even, you know, seeing, okay, maybe I should go after these particular suppliers. So yeah, it all comes down to like actually seeing what's going on inside the business. If it's at a point where you're just really confused and maybe, you know, we look at the ads account and it's not giving us much info, then okay, start a second store. But these days when I talk to students, I think I'm more weary of just telling them to start a second store willy-nilly. What about you, Joe?
Well, the other issue is when we did it, I feel like we had less information.
Whereas, exactly.
Like, I mean, we give people the information that we didn't have. So that's another reason to say just stick with one store for a little longer.
Because the more stores you have, it takes up more bandwidth too, as far as looking at different ads accounts and like just everything. You know, it may not seem like, you know, on paper you could say, okay, I spend 2 hours a week on this store, but there's the more stores you have, it's not just 2 + 2 + 2 + 2. It's like there are things that are going to happen that are going to break your attention. And that's the biggest thing you need to guard as you start to make more money. And you start to realize like, okay, you have to really worry about where you're putting your focus every day. Because if you're putting your focus into customer service, or, you know, you're doing something and then maybe you have stuff outsourced, but like there's a big issue that comes up, it's all taking away from your focus. So nowadays I'm thinking mostly about like my time. I'm thinking about how I can, you know, the things I actually have to focus on and like removing distractions from my life.
Yeah.
So,
and let me just add one thing to that is that when you get to the point of having a ton of stores and you're talking about removing distractions, the act of removing the distractions can be a distraction in itself.
It's time consuming. Yes, exactly. Exactly. So that's what I'm trying to say. It's not a clean, you know, this store takes 2 hours, this store takes 2 hours, because they're both going to demand your attention at the same time. And it's going to be harder and harder to manage your time. And so for us, it wasn't like we had all of our stores at the same time and then we were able to grow them all at the same time. What had to happen was one kind of naturally separated itself, and that's what got the most of our attention. And then once we sold that store, we now had extra time to be like, okay, this is what worked. This is what we learned. We have to now go and put in the energy to apply it to the other stores.
Yeah.
And that's what we were able to do, but we could not have done it on all stores at the same time.
No, but it is good to one good thing about, well, the first priority in all of this, I think, is to get that initial cash flow secured in any sort of business that you're doing. Because I mean, I think we're undergoing this with the content sites right now, is that I look at where it is, and I look at where the cash flow I want it to be. So I want the cash flow to be $30,000 to $80,000 per month in ad revenue and affiliate revenue. We're not there yet, but I know that once I get to that cash flow, it's basically unstoppable at that point. Because then what can I do? You have so much operating revenue, so much like extra cash coming in that you can invest it into buying more sites if you want. You can invest it into like a bulk content buy. You know, you can do something where you just spend $100,000 on content, like get it done as fast as possible. You can take some and invest it. And that's what's really going to snowball to complete wealth and financial freedom. I have to sneeze. Oh my God. I think I'm going to lose it.
Don't do it.
Fuck. Okay. It's gone.
Nothing to sneeze at. All right. There you have it.
That's disappointing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so I think kind of to the same equivalent, when we were able to sell that first store, you know, we got, you know, over $100,000, whatever it was, $130,000. At that point, no one could really tell you anything. And tell us now, you know, I think at that point, it was a way more significant sum of cash. But it really drove home, okay, now we're officially out of the mud with all of this.
Wait, is that an expression? No one can tell you anything? What do you mean by that?
What do I mean? Yeah, it's an expression. I don't know.
It's like, you can't tell me nothing?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I'm not sure get it, but yeah. Like this is it. Like, this works.
You're such a boomer, Joe. Yeah, exactly. This works. You can't tell me nothing.
Gotcha. Okay.
So now that I completely lost my train of thought.
Well, we have to clarify to the viewers what you're talking about.
You're the only one that doesn't understand. So, so I forgot where we were even going with this.
Once you sell the store, you get a big chunk of revenue. Everything's wide open then. The world is your oyster.
Yeah. But what was good was that, you know, as we said before, it's like you can immediately take that and begin working on the other stores you have already kind of sprouted. Yeah. Whereas if you just hold one big store, even if it, you know, you are able to make it over the financial bookkeeping and stuff, and you're able to like overcome that, you have to then start basically from scratch if you don't have another store, which can be pretty annoying. And I think, to get one store to 20,000. Probably you can't do that in a year most of the time, but I think to get like, it's easy to get a store to 4,000 and then do that pretty quickly, like over and over and over.
Yeah. So people are joining now. They say, so one store or five, recap, please. Well,
I don't think we're coming up with a hard answer yet. I think we're just kind of, we're ping ponging back and forth about what's good about each, because back in the day, we could have never made one store and just be where we are now. But now I wouldn't want five stores.
Yeah.
So, you know, you'll have to go back and listen to all the pros and cons. But Joe, one big thing.
Well, one thing we did say was that, Wait, let me just answer his question. One thing we did say is that if you're working with us, stick with the one store for a longer time. Because the class or the path is more clearly laid out than what we had when we started five stores. We started five stores because we didn't know what we were doing.
Yeah. So I think, you know, a lot of our students actually are able to hit the 100K mark with just like their first store. So I don't know if they have – there's not too many students that have like more than three stores. Some have two. But really, I think the biggest pro of the multiple stores is being able to just break off a chunk of equity and just get that cash when you want it. And like we said, once you start getting over half a mil, when it comes to selling a store, it becomes a bit more of a headache.
Yeah, and I don't think so. I think the goal with dropshipping, we've always said this, the goal with dropshipping should be to get your feet off the ground in online business. Dropshipping sites should not be your whole online business portfolio because of the logistics of managing too many of them. You want a situation where you have a few small ones that you could sell off. You have a big one that you're focused on growing, and you're investing in other types of online businesses, whether that's content sites. We don't do FBA, but even FBA, but things that are logistically really, really straightforward to manage, but require a lot of investment. That's the whole point of the online asset pyramid that we created in the online asset playbook, buildassetsonline.com/playbook. That's really, you know what, people always, I feel like they watch this stream, all they care about is dropshipping. And I feel like the YouTube algorithm and the podcast algorithm has painted us into a corner of these dropshipping gurus. But the truth is that dropshipping is the base of what we do. It's the base of the pyramid, but the goal is to get to those higher points in the pyramid and ideally have one big dropshipping store at the end of the day that you're going to sell for millions.
Yeah, Joe, we've been algorithmed. I think we've let the overlords push us into a corner. So after this, no more dropshipping content.
I wish.
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, no, but okay, so what I was getting at in the beginning of the show, as far as conflicting advice, was when we talked to Ezra Firestone, you know, what we asked him, you know, should we do these dropshipping stores, whatever? And he basically told us not just to have one store, but to just sell one product.
Yes.
And that I've also heard him really emphasize in his words, going deep rather than wide.
Well, that means the same thing as what you just said.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm just taking what he said and applying it to a broader context, because he has stores where he sells more than one thing.
Yeah.
But he's a big proponent of the one big store.
Right.
Versus
but very, very deep, very minimal product line. You know, yes. He's not making stores with thousands of products, that's for sure. He's focused on selling, you know, like a one sort of thing to one particular audience.
Yes. And so when we talk about the one big store, it doesn't have to be a small product line. You can have as many products, more products than you have on the five stores, but if it's under one umbrella, it's still just easier to manage, because it's, you know, it's one email, one support line, one domain, you know, one email sequence, etc. So but the thing where Ezra had it right is all the when you're able to actually go super deep on a store, the way that you're able to do targeting, the way that you're able to do content, etc., is I think something that's super captivating about having a big store. Or it doesn't have to be big in terms of products, like we said, but it could be just one big high earning store.
Yeah. So
is the idea of the content.
Yeah. Once you start adding content, it all builds on each other. So you're not going to be able to do SEO and build a content strategy for five stores at the same time. I mean, maybe you can, but it's going to be a lot better if you just do it for one, especially when you know that the stuff is already working, the stuff is already selling. And the more you do, like the more content you put out, the more traffic you're going to get. So even if you could do it for five stores, the question is, should you, or should you just do it for one and get a greater net effect?
Exactly. Because really with SEO and like just anything you're doing, whether it's email sequencing or targeting and stuff like that, the more effort you can put into this one aspect, the better the results are going to be.
Yeah. And say you save another, you know, SEO aside, say you have a sales guy that's working with you or a sales gal, And, you know, they are really familiar with all the products. They know how to guide the customers, and they're really, really good. You want to send that person as much traffic as possible. You don't want them being in 10 different email inboxes and bouncing around all the time. You want them to get good at selling the products that you sell and to sell more of them.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, in the most ideal world, you would just have one product that you can just drive an infinite amount of traffic to. And that's it, because it's just the most simplistic. So yeah, Russell Brunson had it right. But when you have a store, you don't know which product is going to be. You don't know which product type it's going to be. You don't know which brand it's going to be. Yeah. But once you do have that information, and I think once you start to grow your store past like 200,000, 100,000, then instead of just trying to have five $100,000 stores, you take what's working about the $100,000 store and you lean into it. You say, okay, how can I draw more content to these products that I know work, and, you know, these brands, and et cetera? Because you can, you know, again, it's easier for salespeople. It's easier to just spend more money on one thing.
Yeah.
And it, you know, builds a better relationship with your suppliers, on and on and on.
So I think based off of everything that we've rambled on about today, I feel like we've reached the conclusion that one or two stores is the superior option.
I would say instead of making five stores, I think two is a good max.
Yeah, especially if you do it how we tell you to do it, because you're going to have a lot more room for error with your first store, the room for error that we didn't have.
Yeah. And maybe if you're set on five, maybe you really like the idea of the separate equity type thing, then you need to do it one at a time. Do it more slowly. So you grow a store to 100,000 and then you start another store. Yeah. Versus starting three or four stores basically from scratch like we did.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember just you had all the grasshoppers going to your phone. Everything was it was crazy.
Yeah. Good time zone. Because it really makes you feel productive.
Yeah. And that's what life's all about, right? It's just feeling good.
But at the same time, it was quite draining at the end. To where, you know, maybe the first store we sold it too soon, because it was just too much to handle with everything.
Yeah. No, I'm not looking in the rearview mirror. Like Dave Ramsey says, the rear view gets smaller, the windshield gets bigger.
What?
It's like when you look in the rearview mirror and you're driving, what's behind you gets smaller and smaller and smaller, and what you're driving to looks bigger and bigger and bigger. So most important to focus on the things that are getting bigger than the things that are getting smaller.
Yeah. Yeah, but dropshipping aside, I mean, this really made me appreciate SEO, I think, a little bit more. The content sites a little bit more.
You know, Mike, you've been hinting at that a lot lately. Sometimes, you know, I got to be honest, I feel like it goes unappreciated, everything that I've slaved away on.
Well, I think it's good.
Because let's be clear about this. Between, I don't know if this is a fair comparison, but between the two of us, I feel like in terms of raw revenue driven to the businesses, you've probably driven more revenue, I guess you could say. But yeah, I don't know. I still feel like the SEO stuff is good.
I'd say in terms of profit.
What do you mean?
In terms of, you're saying revenue, I'm saying profit.
Yeah, yeah. I'm saying the tasks that you focus on have driven more profit. But all the SEO stuff, I feel like, continually works towards bigger and better things for everything, even for the land, even though, I mean, we don't do it for the land thing, but just setting up the website and all that kind of all that jazz And
yeah, that's fine. I appreciate the
well, sometimes I feel it. Sometimes I feel like you don't. So
yeah, let's air it out
right here. Let's do it.
No, but I like the content stuff because of how sellable it is. But I think maybe we should have more content sites.
We do. We have quite a number of them, and I'm working very diligently to. I mean, you can, yeah. The wheels are in motion.
What I would say too is I would rather manage 5 content sites making 20,000 a month versus 5 dropshipping stores making 20,000 a month.
Yeah. Yeah. The interesting thing about doing SEO is, like, I feel like before, when I started, I felt like I made a lot of mistakes, and it was all about, like, changing how I did things. But now I'm still making mistakes, but I feel like it's making less mistakes, but there's also more room for improvement. And there's always something you could do better in terms of your strategy. And that's a lot of what I'm noticing right now with the contents. But again, it's been, to drop back to the core topic of this episode, 5 sites versus 1 site. It's because I've tried and seen and tested so many things. But the issue with the SEO stuff is it takes 6 to 8 months to see if what you did is working. So it's a much longer timeline than starting a dropshipping store from scratch.
Yeah, so maybe it'd be worth it to take a $200,000 dropshipping exit and buy maybe like 3 or so content sites with that.
Yeah.
And now you kind of have a head start. Cause I think obviously in terms of like profit, I think I've done more, but I appreciate the implication of the SEO stuff, because I think now we're starting to see the fruits of the labor, although, you know, it's been a long time coming, but I think there's still like the most potential with it.
Yeah.
Whether it's being able to apply it to an existing store, which we've done, on several fronts.
Well, and continue to do. I mean, I think that's.
And I think that in itself made all the effort worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I hope that's not all it amounts to, but definitely a big thing.
And the fact that, we've been able to do it the other way around, where we do like a high ticket content site. And now we can go get suppliers later on that if we want. Right. I think that there's a lot of flexibility within it. And I think the idea of like a fixer-upper type thing where you can buy a content site and then improve it if you have the right strategies, I think is like really appealing.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's what we're going to be doing going forward. The only issue is right now we have too many sites where it's like it doesn't make sense to buy one when we have so much we can improve of ones that we already own.
Yeah,
that's my thought on it, and I try and figure out what's the quickest path to that spot of 30 to 80K per month with this stuff, and so I'm trying to focus on that, because once we get to that point, I'm done.
You're supposed to say they can't tell you nothing.
Yeah, they can't tell me anything once we get to that point.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that's something we should do now, but I'm just saying the building of the skill set. I still think has the most potential.
Church.
So
100. Okay. All right. Should we go through these chats?
Yeah. Oh, we're almost at like, I think we're at an hour. So where does the time go? I feel like we don't even say anything.
That's what I feel like.
We just come on here. We babble. And then
it's too hard. It's too hard to make like legitimate YouTube videos. Or whatever.
It's too hard to be legitimate sometimes. It's easier just to, you know, scam people.
Okay. I love Sean the Don. Sean the Don. He always just asks us about like different things that he could buy or not buy. Okay, if I buy the $2,500 package, can I add more video call lessons if I need to? Yes. Once you're a student, unless you're on a monthly plan and cancel, then you can't buy calls. But once you're a student and you have the packages, or you bought like a core package, you can add calls later.
And yeah. To be clear, we only talk to students.
Yeah.
People can't just buy calls with us.
Yeah. But you can buy calls if you are a student and you don't have any calls left, or you don't have any calls, period. Greg says, Joe feels like giving thanks. Yeah. I try and give thanks every day.
You can give thanks. Yeah. He asked for thanks.
Joe's trying to get thanks. What about Google Ads circumvention account suspension? Has it happened to you? How do you deal with it creating new ads account?
The circumvention thing is coming up a lot now. We're seeing it happen to some students.
I guess I feel like maybe it has to do with like identity verification and getting all that stuff correct out of the gate. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I know there's a few people that were having issues with it in the Discord, but I think from what I've seen historically is that people have been able to overcome the issue and get it lifted. But I mean, back in the day, getting suspended from Merchant Center used to happen all the time, like literally every time. But we used to just call them and say, why am I suspended? And then they would say, because of this reason. And then we would fix it and then just tell them to unsuspend us and they would do it.
Yeah. We'll see if we can get to the bottom of it. We'll see what comes out of that and whatever. Maybe we'll have a strategy for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it okay to have a price a bit higher than MAP? I don't know why you'd be putting yourself at a disadvantage.
Yeah, unless your price is still lower than everyone else. But at that point, I would consider that like not MAP. Like you're playing a not MAP game. Because it's just... The whole point of MAP is that you know you're the lowest price. And so you can compete on price all the time. And you don't have to worry about that when you're running ads. If you need a price above MAP, usually that means like your shipping costs are really high and stuff. Or your margins just suck. But it also means someone can just come and undercut you. And so once you get undercut in Google Ads and stuff, your cost per click are going to go to shit. It's going to be really hard to compete. So if you have the price higher than MAP, you need to treat that supplier as if they don't have MAP.
Yeah. So Greg says, starting your own branded product has to be the next step. Once you know what sells, I'll do private label once I have the working capital to get out of drop shipping. Maybe. To me, I think the content sites are probably the next good step than starting your own branded product, just because, I don't know. I prefer to have, once you have the money to spend, I prefer to have things that you don't have to worry about. Like you just put it out there and then.
It's all about digital property these days anyway.
Yeah. I don't know. The whole private labeling thing to me, I mean, people do very well with it. There's no doubt about it. I'm not hating on it, but to me, it seems more of too much work for me, too much headache. Now you got, you know, the stuff with the ports. I don't want to worry about logistics or like supply chain stuff.
Yeah. Especially now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great to have your own brand, and I think it makes things a lot more sellable, especially at the high level.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the people that buy like multi-million dollar businesses, they want to buy your brand off you.
Yeah.
That's where a lot of the institutional money is. But I think it's a bit of a, number one, capital wise, it's like a huge pain in the ass.
Yeah, I think it's important to define,
logistic wise,
it's important to define your financial goals and work around that. And, you know, for me.
Yeah, exactly.
Like I said, I think for me, financial freedom, number one, if I can get there with the least stress possible, then we're good.
Yeah. If your goal is, you know, you want $10 million and you want to have a $10 million exit and you want to have your own brand and like, you have a reason for it, then maybe it's worth pushing through those things. But yeah, to me, it just seems like a lot more work to do, a lot more headache, a lot more capital.
I would do, I mean, I guess what it comes down to is I would do it when we are at the point where it's just like, all right, I would do it when I literally don't have to lift a finger to do it. Like I would just hire a manager, hire someone that can literally replace me and just tell them exactly what to do. And then have them hire people. That's how I would do something at that scale like that.
But if not for the logistical issues right now, would you consider doing FBA with like a high ticket product?
Not really. I feel like it's just a whole other thing to learn. Okay. That's my feeling.
I feel like I would consider it for an existing store.
Yeah, possibly.
Like I would try to explore it as a strategy for when you have a bigger store and like again working on building off of everything we talked about here.
Yeah.
You know, I think it gives you a little bit more control, but that comes with just like I said, extra capital investment, extra time, new things to learn. But yeah, if you want to get that valuation as high as possible, then that would be something to consider.
Yeah. So I think we got to most of these questions.
Devang Gupta said, when starting from scratch, how many products would be enough?
I think we had a whole episode on that. I think the answer was 20 at minimum, 500 at most, something like that.
I'll agree with that.
What about Google Ads account suspensions in general? Are you usually able to fix them? I mean, we haven't really dealt with them, fortunately. So it's hard to say. I mean, I feel like you just got to get on the try and get through to someone. I will tell you. So even though we haven't dealt with Google Ads account suspensions, what we have dealt with is Amazon suspensions, Kindle suspensions, lots of stuff like that. And what I will say is that the fastest way to solve the problem is to talk to the right person. And if it's getting to the point where it's getting stupid and like you call them and no matter what, you're not getting the callbacks that you want and you can't get through to the right person, a good strategy is to like go on like LinkedIn or like go to like Twitter or something and find the people that are working. Like, you know, you can find people who work at Google Ads through those type of platforms and then hit them up and be like, what the heck? We got our Kindle account suspended a while back and we got it reversed just because my friend, his old boss was working at Kindle. And so my friend sent him a text and it was reversed very quickly. And I think we had some sort of weird account immunity after that.
Yeah, we definitely had immunity, diplomatic immunity after that. But I mean, that was a miracle on ice. But that was bullshit anyway to begin with, because we only got suspended because they confused our accounts. Like,
yeah,
they somehow thought we were together when there was, I don't know.
Yeah, no. But the point is, I think it's just about like, you know, who are you talking to? You know, like getting in touch with the right person. I'm not saying it's going to be like that every time where your friend knows someone, but it's more like, can you get in touch with them on the phone or whatever?
Yeah. So, I mean, really the answer is you have to be relentless.
Yeah.
Until you figure out what the issue is and then make sure you fix the issue. But then continue to be relentless to get your stuff back.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that, so when we were doing, we've experienced these kind of suspension issues a lot more with Kindle. Like it wasn't just that one time. Like Amazon Kindle used to have the worst like support. And I remember like we took that as a signal to diversify, and we did diversify. That's how we got into dropshipping. But there were other publishers around us who continue to publish to this day and are successful at it, who had that relentless mindset. They're like, no matter what, I'm going to sell on Kindle. Like I'm going to do Kindle no matter what. I don't care if I get suspended. You know, they're just going to find a way around it. And there's a will, there's a way. I remember when I was doing retail arbitrage, which I feel had a lot of risk because you had all this inventory. And if you get your Amazon account suspended, you're in trouble. And I remember I was listening to a podcast. It was in like 2014. And this guy had way more inventory than me from like retail arbitrage. And I remember him saying like the person asked, like, what about, you know, Amazon suspensions? What if you get suspended from Amazon? And he's like, I'll do what it takes to make a new account. Like, I'll just get a new computer, get a new IP. Like, the point is, he wasn't giving up no matter what. So relentless is the term to describe it.
Yeah, and I'm looking inside of our Discord here because I knew that someone was asking about this recently, and our boy Saj chimed in and said that he had an issue with Merchant Center over the summer, and I guess he was able to get it resolved. I think he was doing the chat box, he was emailing, he was calling, he was going on the Google forum, and I guess he was able to get it just dealt with through one of those means. Sometimes I have a hard time understanding what Saj is getting at, but yeah, he elaborated on the same point. Like, you have to just be patient, just carry on, and do your best to overcome the obstacle, whatever it is. So yeah, I mean, it sucks to have it happen like when you're just getting started, because usually that's when they do it. But I think with anything good you're going to do, there's always going to be hurdles to overcome. And in fact, you should expect them with the majority of, any success we've had required several hurdles to overcome. And it's just part of owning a business. So I wish I had a better answer, an exact solution, but just got to do what it takes.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Well, it's been fun, everyone. BuildAssetsOnline.com/playbook. Get our free web class. Check that out. If you're interested in working with us, what are we discussing after this call? What were we discussing before this call, Mike? And what we were talking about? What are we going to talk about after this call? We're discussing how...
I can't say.
Well, prices are going to be increasing. We've been saying that all the time, but we've legitimately been talking about it today. So
yeah,
we got to keep up with inflation.
Inflation is going crazy, but we're also going to inflate the course materials.
Yeah.
We're going through, I think there's some really exciting things that we're going to be adding, Joe.
Yeah.
We got a lot to say. We got a lot more to say.
Yeah.
And people are now in the position where, yeah, do they make a bunch of stores? Do they make one big store? And that's where we can focus more of our energy now, not just on helping students get their first sale, but helping people really take it to the next level.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Well, oh man,
all right.
Where's my photo? I have my outro photo. Let me get that ready. All right. Well, thanks for watching, everyone. Appreciate it. BuildAssetsOnline.com/playbook. And
take it easy.
Thanks for listening to the Build Assets Online podcast. If you've enjoyed the show, don't forget, subscribe, share, and leave us a rating on whatever platform you might be listening from. And if you're ready to learn how to build your own online business portfolio, start now by visiting buildassetsonline.com/playbook. We'll see you in the next episode.